Hello everybody, listening to the Concepts podcast. So today we're going to be talking about philosophy. Today's topic is going to be about venturing out into logic. Please feel free to send gifts and diamonds and stay tuned for better concepts every day. So what exactly is an argument? Philosophers use the word argument in a different way than you might think. In philosophy, an argument is not a disagreement or a yelling match. An argument is called a claim, called a conclusion, supported by other claims called premises. It can be easier to think of the conclusion as what you are trying to prove and the premises as the evidence. Consider the following argument. So you have premises which make up the conclusion. The premises should not be self-contradictory and should be logically rational. Imagine premise 1 to be: universe is either goes back infinitely or it has a beginning. Premise 2: the universe cannot go back infinitely because energy cannot cross an infinite time to get here. The conclusion: therefore, the universe has the beginning. So remember, premise 1 was that universe can either go back infinitely or it has a beginning. The premise 2 is that the universe cannot go back infinitely because energy cannot cross an infinite time to get here. And therefore, the conclusion is the universe has the beginning. Notice that arguments are like math problems. When you add up the premises, they supposedly equal or support the sum. That is the conclusion. Notice that every argument has exactly one conclusion, but may have any number of premises. Complete the following exercise to reinforce this concept. So anyone who is listening to the Logic podcast, please try out these exercises yourself to understand if you've understood the concept of logic, conclusion, and premises. So, identify the conclusion and the premises in the following answers. Oh, is the voice breaking? So, the first... I'm sorry about that. Is it okay now? So, the first sentence is, the universe must go back infinitely, since there would have to be an uncaused first cause if it had a beginning. And an uncaused first cause is impossible. So have you tried understanding what the conclusion and the premises are in the following argument? I repeat the statement. The universe must go back infinitely, since there would have to be an uncaused first cause if it had a beginning. And an uncaused first cause is impossible. So the answer is, the universe must be infinite is the conclusion. It is followed by two premises. By the way, this argument might lead one to study the cosmological arguments for the existence of God. The arguments are much deeper than those presented here. My second statement, if there were an infinite timeless God, finite minds could not grasp this God. Therefore, the failure to grasp God is evidence for God. The answer. The failure to grasp God is evidence for God is the conclusion. It's preceded by one premise. This argument is derived from Simone Weil's Hidden God. The third statement. God probably does not exist because there is so much of suffering in the world. The answer. God probably does not exist is the conclusion. It's preceded by one premise. This argument is derived from God's existence. This argument is derived from any theme. God would not allow suffering. That is the hidden premise. Statement number 4. Water is gentle, but it can erode the hardest of rocks. Therefore, you will effortlessly achieve when you act gently, which is derived from the philosophical concept Taoism. The answer is, the first sentence is the premise. The second sentence is the conclusion. Water is gentle is the premise. Therefore, identify the words like therefore, thus, so. These are indications that the statement is a conclusion. Statement 5. All men are mammals. Tall is a man. So, tall is a mammal. The answer is, tall is the mammal is the conclusion. It is preceded by two premises. This type of argument is called a syllogism. S-Y-L-L-O-G-I-S-M. Syllogisms have three terms. Two premises and one conclusion. Let's examine another set of arguments to understand if you really understood what a premise is and what a conclusion is. Statement 1. Killing is not always wrong because it is morally permissible to kill in self-defense. Have you identified what the conclusion is? I repeat the statement. Killing is not always wrong because it is morally permissible to kill in self-defense. The answer is, killing is not always wrong is the conclusion. One premise follows. If you believe it is always wrong to kill, you are an absolutist about killing. The next statement. Vampires suck blood. Beings that suck blood are called phlebotomists. Therefore, vampires are phlebotomists. In this statement, the first two sentences are premises. That is, premise 1. Vampires suck blood. Premise 2. Beings that suck blood are called phlebotomists. And the conclusion is, therefore, vampires are phlebotomists. So are you getting the grasp of what a premise and a conclusion is, ladies and gentlemen? Thanks a lot for staying tuned to listen about logic in the philosophy podcast. Let's look at another set of arguments just to make sure that you've understood what premises and conclusion really means. The statement 1. You cannot prove science will not explain everything. Therefore, it will. I repeat the sentence. You cannot prove science will not explain everything. Therefore, it will. So here, the first sentence is the premise. And the second is the conclusion. Therefore is the conclusion indicator. This is a poor argument. The fallacy of arguing from ignorance. So in philosophy, there are some concepts called logical fallacies which we will be looking on into later. Another sentence. I can trust my senses because your senses agree with my senses. I repeat. I can trust my senses because your senses agree with my senses. The premises and conclusion here are, I can trust my senses is the conclusion. I can trust my senses is the conclusion. And it is followed by one premise. Because is a premise indicator. So, ladies and gentlemen, you need to, in order to understand the basis behind logical philosophy and premises and conclusion, you need to be able to identify some key terms. For example, because is a premise indicator. It actually identifies the cause of the premise. Therefore is a conclusion indicator. Again, you have ergo. Ergo is a conclusion indicator. Therefore, so identifying keywords will help you identify the premise and the conclusion and see if they don't contradict each other in order to understand the rationality behind the premise and the conclusion. So in this sentence, I can trust my senses because your senses agree with my senses. I can trust my senses is the conclusion. It is followed by one premise. Here, because is the premise indicator. This seems to be a weak argument because there's a logical fallacy. It's called the fallacy of popularity or begging the question. However, it is one of the better arguments we have for trusting our senses. There's this idea that we might be living in a simulation or, you know, the perils of artificial intelligence, which are really, you can't easily dismiss as arguments, but we need to be able to rationally arrive at the conclusion possible. Because simulations are possible. So next, chapter 2. We're going to be seeing about the two steps to evaluate arguments. So imagine you are in a debate show.
and you're listening to the arguments put forward by both the opponents. How would you know which argument is valid, which argument is irrational? So, but in order to know this, you need to be introduced to the concept of evaluating arguments. So far, we know that an argument consists of multiple premises and arrives at a conclusion. The premises do not contradict each other. This is a very important point. Also, we have something called premise indicators and conclusion indicators. So now, we're going to be venturing out into this topic called the steps to evaluate arguments. In order for you to understand how to evaluate arguments, I have shortened the steps to easily two steps. So there are two arguments. There are two ways arguments can go bad. The argument can have a faulty premise. It can be false or unclear. In other words, every argument could be faulty because there is a problem with the facts or the reasoning from the facts. So what this says is that the premise itself can be irrational. It can be unclear, dubious, and the facts might not be true. Let's start with the latter concept, since that is more easier to understand. Step 1. Bad inferences. An inference is the reasoning or movement from the premise to the conclusion. It is the process of deriving a conclusion from an assumed premise, which is known to be true. So in order for the conclusion to be true, the premises which are assumed should also be true. Many people confuse the conclusion with the inference. But the conclusion is your final destination and the inference is how you arrive there. An inference is the process of reasoning, not a statement you can see. When testing inferences, you should assume the premises are true and then ask whether the conclusion is well supported by those premises. Again, to test the inference, assume the premises are true, even if you know they aren't. So assuming that the premises are true is a very important step to understand if the conclusion is rational or not. Consider the following two arguments. Argument 1. Premise 1. All whales are mammals. Premise 2. Shamu is a whale. The premise 1 was all whales are mammals. Premise 2. Shamu is a whale. The conclusion is Shamu is a mammal. So do you understand how we arrived at the conclusion? The premise 1 was all whales are mammals. Premise 2 was Shamu is a whale. So we assumed indirectly that both these premises are true. And we arrived at the conclusion Shamu is a mammal. Another argument for you to be able to understand. Premise 1. All whales are mammals. So take a moment to see if you can explain why argument 1 has a good inference and argument 2 has a bad inference. Do you understand? See, argument 1 has a good inference. The argument 1 was, all whales are mammals, Shamu is a whale. Argument 2 was, all whales are mammals, Shamu is a mammal, therefore Shamu is a whale.
So, argument 2, are you stay tuned? I'm sorry about the network connection. So, the argument 2 was, all whales are mammals,
Shamu is a mammal, therefore, Shamu is a whale. So, take a moment to see if you can explain why argument 1 has a good inference and argument 2 has a bad inference. Let's check the answer. Argument 1 has a good inference because the premises support the conclusion. Indeed, it is a good argument. This is called a valid deductive argument because it is impossible for the conclusion to be false if we assume the premises are true. The most important step for a conclusion to be rational is assumption of the premises to be true. The argument 2 is invalid because you cannot infer Shamu is a whale from the fact that Shamu is a mammal.
And all whales are mammals. That is because if you're saying all whales are mammals, it is not equivalent to saying all mammals are whales. All whales are mammals is not the same as saying all mammals are whales. It's just like saying all A are B is not the same as all B are A. This is the most fundamental idea behind logic. For example, all cats are animals, but which is not the same as all animals are cats. All cats are animals is not the same as all animals are cats. You cannot infer one statement from the other. The second argument about whales is invalid, mainly because it indirectly just tries to say that. Notice that the argument 2 has a true conclusion and has true premises. We always assume the premises to be rational and true in order to attain a rational conclusion. To better understand this point, consider another bad argument with the same form as the argument 2. Argument number 3. I hope you're following this, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very glad to have you this evening with me today to venture out into the world of philosophy. Premise 1. All cats are animals. Premise 2. Lassie is an animal. Conclusion. Lassie is a cat. Premise 1. All cats are animals, which is true. Premise 2. Lassie is an animal. Okay, the probability of Lassie being an animal is present. Conclusion. Lassie is a cat. This is a bad argument. It is easier to see the bad inference in this argument because the conclusion is obviously false. Since we know, Lassie can also be a dog. Lassie can be a boar. Indeed, most people say it is a bad argument because the conclusion is false. But that misses a point. It is a bad argument because the inference is bad. Only when the premise or the inference is bad can the conclusion be irrational or false. In short, it does not matter with bad inferences which have true or false premises. Nor does it matter if the conclusion is true or false. The problem with bad inferences is that the conclusion would not follow from the premises even if the premises were true. So the idea behind so many examples of different sets of arguments is that you need to be able to assume that the premises are rational and true in order to assume or even derive at a logical conclusion. So let me give you an exercise for you to be practice on yourself the idea of premise, conclusion, and identify which has a bad argument. I hope you'll be able to do this. If you have any doubts, please message me and I will clear them. Argument number 1. Hitler was a bad man, so you should not believe anything he believed. The answer is, have you taken the time to understand the conclusion in each argument and explain to yourself why each has a bad inference? I shall repeat the sentence for you again. Hitler was a bad man, so you should not believe anything he believed. The answer is, even when we assume Hitler was bad, the conclusion does not follow because Hitler obviously held some true beliefs. Example, everybody knows that 2 plus 2 is equal to 4. This is a universal fact. It won't change no matter any part of the world. 2 plus 2 is fact, is universal, it is objective. And Hitler also believed in 2 plus 2 is equal to 4, obviously. Also, automobiles exist. He might have held a belief. Therefore, the answer is, even if we assume Hitler to be bad, the conclusion does not follow because Hitler obviously held some true beliefs. My second statement, I am not free because my cells are not free. I shall repeat the statement again. I am not free because my cells are not free. So the conclusion here, if you've understood carefully, I am not free is the conclusion. It does not follow any premise. My cells are not free. This is the composition fallacy. So this is a logical fallacy here, which is called the composition fallacy. The whole does not have to have the same property as the parts, just as the whole of water may be wet. So what the composition fallacy says is that, I shall give you the example of water. For example, the whole of water can be wet. And we all know that water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen. H2O is the formula for water. So water is wet. But that's not true, that hydrogen and oxygen are also wet. Hydrogen and oxygen are usually dry. They exist in the gaseous state. So this is called the composition fallacy, assuming that just because the whole is true, a part of it also has the properties of the whole. Another argument, you cannot prove God does not exist, so he does. I'll repeat the argument again. You cannot prove God does not exist, so he does. So if you've understood carefully, the conclusion here is God exists. The conclusion does not follow the inability to prove he does not exist. This is the fallacy of arguing from ignorance. So while we've understood what a premise is, what a conclusion is, we've also seen what logical fallacies are. We've spoken about the logical fallacy of ignorance, arguing from ignorance, and we've also framed the composition fallacy. So that was a step one of identifying how to evaluate an argument, bad inference. Let's look at step two, false or unclear premises. Arguments also go bad because they have false, dubious or unclear premises. Most people understand this well, but let's do an exercise for you to understand what I'm saying. I want you to underline the conclusion. I need you to identify the conclusion and identify the problematic premises, ladies and gentlemen. The argument number one, all whales are stars. All whales are stars. I am a whale, so I am a star. First of all, the inference is good because the premises and the conclusion are rational. We have said that all whales are stars. I say, but I am a whale, so I am a star. But the premises are false because we know that all whales are not stars. And we also know that I am not a whale. So even though the premise and the conclusion follows a rational order, the premises are false. Therefore, the argument does not hold good. The second statement. Everyone is selfish, so you are selfish. Again, I'll repeat the statement. Everyone is selfish, so you are selfish. The inference is good or valid, but the premise is dubious. Intelligent people will disagree about the meaning of selfish and whether everyone is selfish. So there was a research conducted by a company called Batson for scientific evidence against the claim that people are always selfish, whereas against psychological egoism. Let's look at another example. Since light is a wave and must travel through a medium, there must be an invisible ether through which it travels. So we know that light has both the property of a wave. So the argument is that since light is a wave and must travel through a medium, there must be an invisible ether through which it travels. So let's reconstruct the statement. The inference is okay, but the premise is false. Light does not have to travel through a medium like water. Waves do. This was a turning point in the history of science. So let me summarize how to evaluate a particular argument. In assuming the fact that you know what a premise is, what a conclusion is, and you've also taken the steps to identify the words that indicate a premise or a conclusion. When evaluating arguments, take the following two steps. Step one, assume the premises are true, even if you know they aren't. Now ask yourself, do the assumed premises provide good reasons for believing the conclusion? If not, the inference is poor. If yes, the inference is good. So first of all, you need to assume the premises are true, even if you know they aren't. And after that, you should assume that the assumed premises provide good reasons for believing the conclusion. Step 2. Are the premises true or reasonable? These two steps are how you evaluate arguments, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you understood the idea of premise, conclusion, and the rationale behind how an argument works. And also how do you identify and evaluate whether an argument is rational or not. So keeping this idea in the back of your mind, let me introduce the concept of logical fallacies to you, which is a very interesting concept in philosophy and needs to be studied about if you really want to be, capitalize on the entire rationale behind logic itself. And it's very useful for you in everyday life. So let me start by saying, why do you have to study logical fallacies? Why should you care about fallacies at all? Well, studying logical fallacies is an important part of logic and one that can immediately enrich your life. It will help you develop the vocabulary and the skills needed to better evaluate the arguments of politicians, neighbors, advertisers, authorities, and even people who've loved you before you began studying logic. So, knowing the fallacies is also a mark of a well-educated mind. It greatly enriches the quality of philosophical discussions. For example, imagine a student argues that it is good to eat animals because it is natural to do so. Instead of getting bogged down in a vague argument about naturalness, another student can simply ask, why isn't that the appeal to nature fallacy? In short, you can also study about both informal and formal fallacies and engage in philosophical conversations at the highest levels. Imagine visiting a forest like the Amazon. Most of us will simply see a bunch of green, but a botanist will see many different types of leaves. She will understand the similarities and differences, and she'll be able to teach to her students which kind of leaves are safe to eat. Is that a reticulate pattern? Look at the stems and the roots. In a similar way, some people think about fallacies as a bunch of bad arguments. They cannot distinguish among the fallacies and are lost, though they may not know it. While it is true that fallacies are faulty inferences, each fallacy is different, and knowing the name and pattern of each can clarify your thinking, improve your debating skills, and help you discover the truth. The fundamental idea behind venturing out into philosophy is so that you can construct and deconstruct your own worldview. You can identify which is true, which is untrue, and so on. So let's look on into the logical fallacies. The first fallacy I'll be talking about today is the appeal to nature fallacy. Why you cannot argue it's natural, so it's good. So let me first define for you the appeal to nature fallacy and then give you examples about it. So the definition of the appeal to nature fallacy goes something like this. This fallacy arises when we infer something is good just because it is natural, or something is bad because it is unnatural. The naturalistic fallacy has other meanings, but we will focus on one particular meaning. Example: many people argue it is morally permissible to eat cows and pigs because it is natural. They usually argue it is natural because humans have the teeth for it. It is a part of a cycle of life, or because other animals do it. Some people argue homosexuality is immoral because it is unnatural. Another statement: it is okay to throw poop because I saw monkeys throwing some poop at the zoo. Another statement: we should not help the poor or the weak because survival of the fittest. So let's discuss further about the appeal to nature fallacy. Even if we could prove the naturalness of eating meat, it would not necessarily be right. To see why, Think of the many acts you believe to be both natural and immoral. For example, some biologists believe that human beings evolved natural predispositions towards rape, aggression, xenophobia. But is it morally good to aggressively rape or be xenophobic? The obvious answer is no. Someone can be naturally violent, but does that mean that the person should naturally follow or act on those violent instincts? Someone can be naturally self-centered, but is it moral for the person to act on those particular natural instincts? The answer is no. Now consider something like health. Poisonous berries may be natural, but it does not follow they are healthy. Chemotherapy may be unnatural, but it does not follow it is bad. So what this argument says is that just because something is natural, it does not necessarily mean that it is good for us. And just because something is bad, it does not necessarily mean that it is unnatural. In short, you think some natural acts are immoral and some moral. So it is logically inconsistent to argue an act is moral simply because it is natural. And it is inconsistent to argue an act is immoral simply because it is unnatural. The vagueness of the term natural is another problem with appealing to naturalness or unnaturalness. The problem people disagree about what is natural. For example, people disagree about whether violence and altruism are natural. Are skyscrapers natural since they are made from natural human minds? In short, natural is a vague term that causes confusion. How to avoid this particular logical fallacy? Do not assume natural is good or unnatural is bad. So, in order for you to understand about this particular logical fallacy much more in detail, I am just going to give you two very short examples. Statement number one. Give examples of how the appeal to nature fallacy arises in debates about homosexuality. The environment, euthanasia, or other controversial issues. This is the idea which splits people into conservatives or libertarians. Imagine an environmentalist who argues that we should not interfere with an ecosystem because the natural order is good. Explain why this is an appeal to nature fallacy and how the environmentalist could improvise on his particular argument. The first argument we've seen is the appeal to nature fallacy. I hope you've understood about this particular fallacy because this is a very common fallacy that people commit in day-to-day life. The second fallacy I'm going to be talking about is the black and white fallacy. It's also called the false dichotomy, the false dilemma, or polarized thinking. It's a very interesting fallacy. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. The definition of the black and white or the false dichotomy fallacy is the fallacy arises when we illegitimately limit the number of alternatives available. For an example, you must be a Republican or a Democrat. You are not a Democrat, therefore you must be a Republican. The problem is the options are limited. You could be a libertarian, anarchist, socialist, across the political spectrum. There are so many types of categories. For example, libertarian, centrist, a conservative, alt-right, alt-left. A person can be anywhere on the political spectrum. It is irrational to assume that a person is a Republican just because he or she is not a Democrat. The premise for this fallacy is common. So let's have a discussion. It is important to remember that sometimes there really are only limited options. For example, the following premises really do present a limited number of alternatives. I am either alive or dead. God either exists or does not exist. 2 plus 2 equals 4 or does not equal 4. Keep in mind that lot of philosophers can use different types of names for the black and white thinking fallacy. False dilemma, false dichotomy, the either-or fallacy, but they all pretty much the same synonyms. So how do you avoid the black and white fallacy? Think about each situation to identify whether there really are a limited number of options. Do not rely on emotion alone, which often sees in black and white. So far, we've looked at two different kinds of logical fallacies: the appeal to nature and the black and white thinking. So how do we avoid the appeal to nature logical fallacy? We should not assume that all natural things are good and all unnatural things are bad. The second logical fallacy, black and white thinking, this really depends upon the options. Are the options really limited? That is how you avoid the black and white thinking or the false dichotomy logical fallacy. The third logical fallacy I'll be talking about today is a very popular philosophical concept or a logical fallacy in the world of philosophy. It's called the ad hominem. So the word is derived from Latin ad hominem. Definition: ad hominem is Latin for quote, to the man, unquote. This is when we try to disprove a conclusion by criticizing the person or the person's circumstances instead of the argument. Example: your argument against eating meat is bad because you hypocritically eat meat. This is an ad hominem fallacy because hypocrisy has nothing to do with logical structure and content of your vegetarian argument. Some argue Catholic priests are pedophiles, so their beliefs about God must be false. Again, this is the ad hominem logical fallacy. So it is important to understand that an insult is not an ad hominem fallacy. The insult becomes a fallacy only when we erroneously infer a conclusion from the insult. For example, if I argue that a particular politician's law is bad because that particular politician is a jerk who cheated on his wife for something, then I argued in a fallacious way. The problem is, the cheating has nothing to do with the law. In general, the problem with the ad hominem fallacy is the attacked person's circumstances or actions do not usually affect the conclusion. So how do you avoid this particular argument? Focus on the evidence and the argument, not the person's negative or positive qualities. Because when you look at the person, people are always subjective. Arguments need to be objective. The person's circumstances need not necessarily affect the conclusion of an argument. Therefore, the person's circumstances should not be considered. There are various types of ad hominem arguments. I'll give you a few examples. Circumstantial ad hominem arguments, abusive, guilt by association, poisoning the well, ad feminine, thieu coq. But what they all have in common is that they focus on the person instead of the argument. I will talk about logical fallacies in detail throughout my philosophy show in future episodes. So far we've seen three logical fallacies: appeal to nature, black and white thinking, ad hominem. I hope you've understood what these logical fallacies mean and really have grasped the concept behind the rationale behind these concepts. The fourth fallacy I'm going to be talking about today is the genetic fallacy. Let it be short, the definition is: the genetic fallacy arises whenever we dismiss a claim or argument because of its origin or history. Example: you cannot believe Bob's idea because it came from his dream. Another example: the psychologist said X believes in God because X lost his father at a young age, so God doesn't exist. The third example: that is not possible because he got the idea from a science fiction film. Let me discuss about this. To better understand the problem, imagine Pythagoras created the theorem after smoking a joint. I know this is pretty funny, but please imagine this. So the Greek mathematician Pythagoras imagined him smoking a joint and creating the theorem. A square plus B square equals C square. So the drug-induced origin does not make the idea of A square plus B square equals C square false. Just as we can examine the mathematical proofs for the Pythagoras theorem and ignore the drug-induced origin, we can rationally examine the evidence and ignore the origins of any belief. The genetic fallacy also arises when a person gives evolutionary reasons to explain away beliefs. The problem is explaining the cause for the claim is usually irrelevant to whether the claim is true. For example, let's say there is evidence that belief in the physical world arose for evolutionary reasons. I would be committing the genetic fallacy if I argue that the physical world does not exist because it arose for evolutionary reasons. The evolutionary explanation is only helpful in such debates if I already have strong and independent arguments against belief in the physical world. So, the genetic fallacy often arises when people confuse reasons with causes. To understand the difference, notice that the cause of deducing all A's are C's from all A's are B's and all B's are C's, this is nothing but brain activity. Let's say the cause of this operation is Q fibers firing in your brain. So how do you avoid the genetic fallacy argument, logical fallacy? Focus on the arguments, not on the origin or history of the arguments. Remember that a bad source does not make an argument bad. Only false premises or a faulty inference make an argument bad. So, example, the only thing that we need to consider in case of a premise and a conclusion is we need to assume that the premises are true. The premises are true, they do not contradict each other, and the conclusion is rational from the premises. But the source of the premises, even if they are, we do not need to consider the source of the premises. That is basically the genetic fallacy or the genetic fallacy, logical fallacy. So the logical fallacies we have looked so far is appeal to nature, black and white thinking or false dichotomy, ad hominem, genetic fallacy. The last logical fallacy for today is a very interesting fallacy. It's called the slippery slope fallacy. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank you for staying tuned so far on this philosophy podcast. Please stay tuned for further concepts and new ideas every day. And don't forget to send diamonds and hearts. And please send me any messages if you have any doubts regarding the premise, conclusion, logic, anything at all. I would feel more than grateful to clarify the doubts. The slippery slope logical fallacy. Definition. This is when we argue A will cause B and B will lead to undesirable C. Since we do not want C, we should avoid A. I repeat, this is when we argue A will cause B and B will lead to an undesirable C. Since we do not want C, we should avoid A. Examples. If I loan you a dollar today, you will eventually ask me for $10 and then $100. I do not want that to happen, so I cannot even give you $1. This is an example taken from a book called Law, 2003. Another example. All types of murder will become legal if we legalize voluntary active euthanasia. Another example, I must accept the existence of soul if I believe in some form of dualism. So, to understand the premise behind the slippery slope logical fallacy, let's consider the following. It is important to remember that all the above examples are good arguments. If there is good evidence for why A will lead to B will lead to C, and so on. It is only a logical fallacy if I do not give good reasons for why the side will occur, or if there are any good reasons for why the end of the chain is undesirable. In short, not every slope is fallacious. So I thank you for staying tuned and listening to the Concepts Philosophy podcast. So we looked at premise and conclusion identifiers, logical fallacies, and the two ways to evaluate an argument, whether it's rational or irrational. We've looked at five logical fallacies: appeal to nature, black and white thinking, ad hominem genetic, and slippery slope fallacy so far. Please stay tuned for further philosophical concepts and also psychology about art, literature, history, nature. Thank you so much for staying tuned to the Concepts Podcast. Take care and cheers.